Welcome back. Now to Lois Gibbs, a woman who's been making a difference as an environmental activist since Love Canal was discovered as a chemical waste site hazard almost 40 years ago in Upper New York State. Residents near the smoldering landfill in Bridgeton are bringing in Mrs. Gibbs this weekend to counsel and console them. In August, St. Louis Public Radio science reporter Veronique LaCapra had a chance to talk with Lois Gibbs.
Were you always an environmental activist?
No, I actually was a full-time homemaker, taking care of my two young children, my husband, my house, and going to PTA meetings and teaching Sunday school before I found out about Love Canal.
Yeah, so tell me about that. What happened in the spring of 1978 in Niagara Falls, New York? Like you said, Love Canal. What was that all about?
Love Canal was a toxic waste dump that was buried in the center of our community, which nobody knew about, by the way. And my son kept getting sick, and the pediatrician and I couldn't figure out why. And one day I picked up the newspaper, and it talked about Love Canal having 250 different chemicals in it that were migrating from the dump site into the neighborhood. And it talked about the different diseases that resulted from that. And I connected those diseases to my son's problems. And at that point, I got really angry. It's like, oh my goodness, how could I buy this house and nobody tell me anything? And so I began to organize the neighborhood in 1978, and we established the Love Canal Homeowners Association. And that was 900 residents who lived around the dump site. And we began to organize and push government to do something about the problem. Initially, we wanted them to do testing. When it was determined that the chemicals had leaked throughout the community, affecting all 900 families, then we asked for relocation because that was the only alternative. They couldn't clean up that huge physical acres of land.
All right, let's back up a little bit. So this was a neighborhood, and it was actually kind of built on top of this dump site, wasn't it? The dump site had been kind of covered over.
Actually, the neighborhood wasn't built on the dump. The school was built over the dump, and the neighborhood literally was at the edge of the dump. So the property lines of the nearest home was the property line of the dump site, which had 20,000 tons of chemicals in it. It was just unbelievable. And it was covered with dirt, and then they made it a grassy field. And so if you drove by it, you really didn't see anything. So there was no reason to think that it was anything but a grassy field. And, you know, people would talk about the chemicals emerging on the dump, the top of it, the clay cap would collapse in and the chemicals would surface. But if you didn't walk on top of the field, you would never even notice that.
So tell me more about sort of how you became aware, how you started. You talked about a newspaper article. What other kinds of connections were you making and were your neighbors making at the time?
What was real interesting is I thought my child was the only one that was sick. I mean, we all read the same newspaper. And then when I went door to door to knock on other people's houses and say, you know, we have to close the school. The school is on the dump, for goodness sakes. And so that was our first campaign. And people would start telling me these horrible stories about cancer, about children who were born birth defected. They would talk about the various types of diseases they would have. We had a 12-year-old who had a hysterectomy due to cancer, and we had a 21-year-old who died of crib death, of all things. And so when I went around the neighborhood, I just found that there was an incredible number of diseases. And we asked New York State Health Department to tell us what's going on, come in and do a study. And, of course, they would not do it. So we did our own. And what we found was 56% of our children were born with birth defects, including three ears, double rows of teeth, extra fingers, extra toes, or were mentally retarded, and that women were unable to carry baby full term, and asthma, and just this huge amount of diseases that were above normal. And then we had to pressure the New York State Health Department using that data to get them to do a study. And when they did, they confirmed every single one of them. But what they said, which was really just, it just was crushing. When they said, yes, we found 56% of the kids had birth defects in this community, but we don't believe it's connected to the 20,000 tons of chemicals in Love Canal. We believe that it's connected to a random clustering of genetically defective people. It was outrageous.
And so what did you do next?
So then we decided that we really, this is not about science. It's not about science, because clearly that showed it was not about science, that it's really about creating pressure on decision makers. So we started to organize, and we organized around the governor who is running for re-election, and we bird-dogged him, meaning we followed him everywhere across the state. One or two people would go and carry a sign and ask the governor to do something. And finally, he evacuated pregnant women and children under two in the first two rows of community and said that three-year-olds, four-year-olds, and adults were perfectly fine. And we were like, this is still not science. I mean, you look at the science, and it makes absolutely no sense. They're sort of like removing the canaries from the mine, if you will. So we continued to do political organizing, and that's really what made the difference. The governor finally came back a few weeks later and agreed to evacuate all 239 families, regardless of whether they're pregnant or had children under the age of two, and then erected a 10-foot fence and said everybody inside the fence, that was the 239 families, were at risk, and everybody outside the fence, which is where I lived, was not at risk and did not need to be evacuated, and that they were going to clean up the canal. And so we continued our political organizing, I mean, going after the people who had the ability to make a difference. Occidental Petroleum was the responsible party at Love Canal, but we knew if we just went after them, it would probably be a 10-year lawsuit in order to get relief. So that's why we went after the state, and then later we went after the federal government. And we got Jimmy Carter to come to our backyard and agree 2 years later to evacuate all 900 families who wished to leave from the community, with their homes being purchased at fair market value. And then the other thing he did at that time is he created the Superfund. He signed it on October 10th, a couple months later, but he talked a lot about the Superfund bill was established for the purpose of no one would have to be in the situation that the Love Canal families were in, trying to struggle to get cleanup and struggling to get relocation or whatever is the proper remedy for the situation.
Right. And for people who may not know, the Superfund program you're talking about is a program of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency that locates and cleans up toxic waste sites across the country, right?
Yes, and it's cleaned up thousands of them already. Unfortunately, it doesn't have a whole lot of money these days because the fee on the corporations who generate these toxic chemicals had sunset in 1995. And as a result, it's really using taxpayers' money to do this work. That said, it's still a very good program, and it's a program that's being used all across the country today.
And I'm going to switch gears a little bit now. What's bringing you to St. Louis?
That horrible situation that they have with a landfill on fire. And one landfill is on fire, and it's moving towards the radioactive landfill. And that's just insane. I know the folks have been struggling there for a long time, trying to get it cleaned up, trying to get some kind of assessment of health of their community. Some of them are trying to get relocated. And so I'm going to come and do a teach-in, so to speak, and really talk to them about what is possible and then how can they get that. And you can't get it through working through just the systems, because the system doesn't work.
And you're talking about the Bridgeton landfill, which has had an underground fire smoldering there since late 2010, and that landfill is immediately adjacent to another landfill that folks may have heard of called the Westlake landfill that contains radioactive waste.
Yeah, exactly. And if that fire reaches the radioactive waste, the smoke that comes out of that fire will be radioactive, and it will increase the risks, which are already extraordinarily high, to the community that lives around there. It's totally insane. I don't understand why they let it go for so long, and I don't understand why they're not doing something to protect the people today from both the radioactive contaminants as well as the burning fire landfill site.
You talked about how you're going to be holding kind of a teach-in. What did you mean by that?
Well, I'm going to talk with the folks that attend about what they can do, because this is a serious problem. People are really sick. I mean, I don't understand why EPA is moving so slowly. And so I'm going to talk about how to put pressure on EPA, how to put pressure on other people, such as Bill Gates. You know, Republic, which is the corporation who's responsible for both landfills, Republic has their largest shareholder is Bill Gates. Bill Gates, I just read in Washington Post 2 days ago, I think it was, that he is the wealthiest man in the country. You know, they're talking about we don't have money to this, we don't have money for that. Why can't Bill Gates come forward, use his money that he gets as a dividend from being a shareholder, the largest shareholder in Republic, and fix this community? I mean, it's ridiculous. And so how do you do that? How do you get Bill Gates' attention and at least be able to have a conversation with him as the largest shareholder of Republic and get him to either move people or clean it up or whatever is necessary there?
What do you say to people, not just in this situation, but anyone who might contact you across the country asking what they can do about a toxic waste problem where they live? What do you tell them?
It's really a political fight, so you have to find out who has the power to give you what you want, whether that's a cleanup, whether that's a relocation, whether it's both, and then you have to go after them. And I don't mean in a violent way because I'm a nonviolent person, obviously, but you need to be in their face. You need to make it uncomfortable for them. So elected officials obviously are easy as people to pressure because they're local for the most part or have connections local, even the federal representatives. But people like Bill Gates is a little more difficult because it's a large corporation. But you really need to figure out a plan about who can give you what you want and then how can you make it uncomfortable. Who does Bill Gates care about? Who does Republic care about? Who does the federal senators care about? I don't know who's supporting them and who's not, so I'm not pointing fingers at anybody. But who are those people who have money, who have authority, and can make a difference? You know, EPA says, well, we're not going to relocate anybody. Well, EPA's already relocated people in Times Beach, in Pensacola, Florida, Texarkana, Texas, Georgia, I mean, a number of places across the country. So they can't say, we're not going to and we cannot relocate people. Of course they can and they have, but they're not going to do it unless there's a significant amount of pressure put on them to do it. They're not going to do it just because it's the right thing. They're going to do it because the squeaky wheel gets the oil. And so, you know, talking about some ways in which they might be able to strategize and organize to put pressure on those who can give them what they need. It's you know, these folks aren't looking for handouts. They're just looking for a life without smoke, without toxics, without concern about radioactive waste being in the air as soon as that fire hits that place.
Environmentalist Lois Gibbs talking with St. Louis Public Radio science reporter Veronique LaCapra. Ms. Gibbs will be the keynote speaker at a workshop on the Westlake Landfill, sponsored by the Missouri Coalition for the Environment, on Saturday. You can find details on that on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape when he'll talk with jazz trumpeter Wynton Marsalis, who is in town to open the newly renovated Jazz at the Bistro. You'll also take a look at the St. Louis Chamber Chorus's season opening concert and the new book festival, Lit in the Lou. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll have a special legal roundtable discussion examining the new session of the U.S. Supreme Court. It will be broadcast from the Bryan Cave Moot Courtroom in Washington University School of Law. You are invited to be a part of the audience. Just plan on arriving by 11:30 a.m. for that noon broadcast. More details are available on our website at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with production assistance from Erica Smith, Aaron Dorr, Emma Brown, and Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.